You are listening to GeekaBoss Presents Read, Watch, Play. We discuss all things pop culture, including comics, video games, TV, film, and anime.
Hey guys, welcome back to... Are we going to call it Season 2? Do we... the first podcast of GeekaBoss Presents Read, Watch, Play for 2016. Back, guys.
If Mad Men can be 13 episodes, we can be 13 episodes this season. We're a prestige podcast drama format.
Because I'm sure that's what people expect from the GeekaBoss podcast.
Yeah. And as you know, we can't he's too. He wasn't renewed.
Yeah.
In the second season.
We didn't renew his contract.
We got a lot of notes just saying, can you leave out Stu...
Yeah,
surprisingly,
Stu's too intelligent.
Said no.
Yeah.
I was about to say, surprisingly, most from his mum.
And really, we're at the whim of our fans, so we can't let him in if our fan says no.
But I may cameo just now and then, that's how I get less money from you guys.
Okay, you can stop the pre-recorded message from Stu now.
We can.
we're done with that.
Stu's just a tape recorder.
Yeah.
So, first up, how was everyone's kind of Christmas holiday period?
Relaxing.
Yeah, just a lot of Star Wars.
Yeah,
lots of food, Star Wars.
Sleeping, catching up on sleep.
So now Stu actually suggested this. We're going to go around quickly and kind of give just like a one-word kind of feeling about Star Wars, what we thought of it. And then I think the plan, you guys are going to do another kind of Star Wars, Super Star Wars special where you're actually going to discuss Episode 7.
Yeah, we'll do a spoiler cast, which will probably just be Stu, Billy, and myself. And Christoph, if he wants to jump in. But Christoph's a Star Wars Grinch. He doesn't like Star Wars. He hates it.
I hate fun.
He came out of the movie being all like, this movie is the worst. You know, Geely was a better film than this one, at which point we sort of ejected him from the car. But anyway, we'll do a spoiler cast probably in a couple of weeks when it's been about a month since the film came out, so everyone has a chance to watch it. And then we will rabbit on about what we liked, what we didn't like, and all the plot holes.
But spoiler for that show,
yeah,
I loved it.
I loved it too. It is not perfect, but it is a really good film.
Mm. I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
Yes. Which is what we were expecting. It was what I was expecting for a Star Wars film, was it was going to be fun, not life-changing, not altering the concept of the universe in any way, but just something nice.
Yeah, it lays a good platform and promises a lot going forward, which I think is best case scenario.
Definitely.
I thought it was interesting how Disney's house style is, you can kind of see a lot of what they've learnt works with the Marvel films translated across just in terms of tone.
Mm.
I don't want to go into too much because I don't want to give away specifics.
Like, I know it's a Disney house as well, but it still felt very Star Wars-y.
Mm.
It didn't feel like anything was different at all.
You didn't mind the fact that there were more kind of quips? They kind of had that Marvel sense of sort of quick back and forth?
No, I think it's what we've learned. If you look back at the success of Guardians, you sort of forget that big blockbusters are meant to be fun. And I think that as a genre, but as a style, those big blockbusters take themselves so seriously that they forget to just have a laugh at them, either at themselves or at other things, like the Transformers and things like that. That sort of style of film, don't stop and have enough gags in them, which you want to be you know.
But the thing is, like, even the original trilogy had funny stuff.
Mm.
Like, the comic relief was kind of C-3PO
in
some parts.
And Solo.
No, totally.
Like, yeah.
Maybe it was just I felt like it specifically mimicked a lot of, like, the style of jokes, which I thought was interesting. Not a criticism, but just an observation.
One of the things on that note of mimicking I found is that it really didn't feel like a J.J. Abrams film the way that things like the first Star Trek or Mission Impossible 3 did. And that's because Abrams' strength, as a lot of other critics pointed out, is he's a good mimic of other people's styles, which is why, as Billy said, it felt like an older Star Wars film rather than an Abrams film, which wasn't a bad thing.
Well, it's why he's trusted with insane amounts of money.
Yeah.
I mean, can you think of anyone on the planet who you would trust with, like, $400 million or however much the budget of the movie was?
But you get that sense as well, and I know they're on board for the young Han Solo movie, the Phil Lord and Chris Miller?
Phil Lord and Chris Miller, the Lego movie guys, yeah.
Who are quite good at that, of going to the essence of why you like something and extracting it and giving you, not exactly exactly what you want, but giving you just a few of those hits of nostalgia.
Yep.
And with the gloss of new, which works. It's a nice balance.
Mm.
So, yeah, but we'll go into this a lot more in our spoiler cast. Have they
actually cast Young Han yet?
No, they've got it down. The rumours were that they were looking at, like, you know, about 25 people, but they reckon they'll be probably pushing for an unknown to try and get it. I mean, people...
It'd be cheap.
They're looking at, like, people like, you know, Miles Teller to Dave Franco, and I just think it's one of those things you almost want an unknown, a bit like what we had with Daisy Ridley.
Mm.
You almost want an unknown so they're not burdened taking anything in when you're going to be looking, especially in this film with Force Awakens, with Han Solo playing such a prominent role.
Mm.
He's very much back now in every front of mind for everyone.
Mm.
So it's going to be quite interesting to see what they go for in terms of attitude plus physical appearance. Yeah. I mean, I don't actually care for a young Han Solo movie. I don't care if he actually even really looks like him. Because he's only got to have a swagger and a bravado, a bit like...
And not be blonde.
Well, except, but River Phoenix, but that River Phoenix, you didn't. I didn't mind that in, like, for the such a short period, it didn't ruin the rest of the film. Like, you know, as soon as you make that cut from to modern indie, it wasn't that jarring once it was done.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, again, that's only a 10-minute
But it's snippet. Still, like, it's I get not, what you're saying.
It's not a two-hour film, so...
Yeah, yeah, sure. But yeah, we'll save all of that for the spoiler cast, and that'll go up in a couple of weeks.
All right, well, what we might quickly move on before we jump into read, watch, play is the news item. So the first news item is basically Disney's come out and basically said that there's going to be a new Indiana Jones movie. But apparently, from what I read, it seems like they're only going to go ahead if, not Han Solo.
Harrison Ford. It's hard Harrison to separate the two, isn't it?
It was actually, I think it was one of the conditions for him to come on for Force Awakens, really? Was that he was going to get another crack at Indiana Jones. I think Crystal Skull left a bit of a bad taste in everyone's mouth. I think, yeah, so look at it now, the creative force is going to be involved. We don't know how much of a hand Lucas is going to have. Again, it'll be into, you know, new hands, and it's potentially very good.
Call me the elephant in the room, but am I the only one who is just done with Indiana Jones? I love the original three movies. We don't need any more.
A lot of Crystal Skull worked. If you actually it gets to a certain point where you watch just that, even the first half, you're like, yeah, I'm on board for this, and then it goes to silly town. But you know,
really diplomatic way of putting it.
But if silly you town. Look at. Again, if you look at the energy that Harrison Ford's bringing to Force Awakens, if you threw that into, with the right framing, or even if he's just in there as a framing device to say, to remember, to ease into a young indie. They said that no one else is going to be playing him, so it's probably not going to be the case, but...
Hopefully there's no Mutt.
No Mutt Williams.
No, he's too busy sitting in a cinema watching films of himself.
I was about to say, because they kind of tried to do it with Shia LaBeouf, and it didn't really work.
Also didn't work that Shia came out, like, while on the press tour and was saying, yeah, we made a really bad film. This is bad. Why are you anyone seeing it? And they're all going, Shia, it hasn't come out yet.
Now, I'm no movie producer, but I'm going to say that it's a bad movie in the industry.
He's a weirdo, one.
I don't know. Could it work? I think it could. Like, you know, if they go, again, with the right attitude, the right creatives in it, and just the right story, I think Crystal Skull was three quarters of a film, and I just don't think they didn't stick the landing.
Mm.
I tend to agree with your stick the landing comment, and I also feel like it's such a hot time for nostalgia at the moment. Really, they're mining all these properties. Out of all the properties they could mine, at least it's like Indiana Jones.
Yeah, once that
like score, at least it's a good property.
That score kicks in, like, you know, we had it with Jurassic Park, we had it with Star Wars. Once that kicks in, you half the work's done, or like the Bond theme. But you go back to Crystal Skull, like, you watch that fight, the fight scene that starts in the diner, then ends in sort of the motorbike chase through the campus. Is actually quite fun. Like, that's about the time that it only really felt like in, and even the opening sequence, like, right through when he's being chased and they're jumping from Jeep to Jeep, a lot of that was fun.
I groaned at the nuclear thing.
Yeah, but it's no different to coming out of a plane and being in a blow up boat that you go come out and you land and go down a waterfall.
I know, but it's a nuclear bomb in a fridge.
He gets a signature from Hitler. Like, let's get this in perspective, Billy.
Yeah, he's a Hitler fanboy.
Jeremy, and he heads drunk from the
goblet of
life. So yeah. That's why he hasn't aged that well.
Which doesn't work once you leave the seal, doesn't it? I don't know. It's...
Let's move on to...
At this rate, Harrison Ford is never going to die. If he keeps crashing, or get any less sexy.
Keeps crashing planes, he will.
The second news item is that Psychonauts 2 has reached its funding goal of $3.3 million on crowdfunding
platform
Fig.
You fools.
I'll get to that in a minute, Chris. But just for people who don't know, Fig is basically a new crowdfunding platform made, I believe, exclusively for video games. And the idea behind it is people, as well as paying to, you know, get a copy of the game, they can also put more significant sums of money and actually be investors and then get returns if the game's successful. So I take it there's not a lot of Psychonauts love in the room?
It's not a case of no Psychonauts love. I just think giving Double Fine any money on crowdfunding is a bad idea after Broken Age and the kerfuffle with that. Is Tim Schafer still doing Psychonauts 2?
It's his studio. So
it's Double Fine. So they did a Kickstarter for Broken Age, and they got a lot of money from it, and then made half the game and released it as Broken Age, and then the second half didn't get made for years because they pissed up all that money against a wall. And so many people got so angry that they mismanaged the funds, and they're like, all these people going, I'm never going to contribute to a Double Fine crowdfunding or a Kickstarter again, and then they do this, I'm like, history will repeat itself again.
See, I didn't even know about all the bad stuff at Double Fine. I only knew about, like, I thought that was one of the successful, I didn't realize, like, I heard Broken Age come out and everything, I didn't know about the second part and everything, because I never backed it, so I'd never,
I thought,
I was very,
I just heard it all from other sources.
Billy?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I've done a lot of crowdfunding, mostly comics and board games. I haven't really put money towards a video game until recently.
I like the idea, though, that you get a piece of the back end. If you're propping something up, and then they go, well, thanks for that, everyone. We got in and now we boomed.
Yeah, you, if you're one of those people who spends $1,000 so you can have, like, lunch with their creator or something, wouldn't you rather put in three and get some returns?
Exactly.
And that says maybe, but the problem is... My problem isn't with crowdfunding at all. Like, I back a ton of stuff on Kickstarter. My problem is Double Fine... not only didn't release the second half of their game, which was originally, they weren't going to split it in half, it was going to be one game, they didn't release the conclusion for a couple of years, they didn't just do that, apparently the ending was really bad, and there wasn't any new art assets, or very little in the way of new art assets or new design, it was just recycled stuff from the first game, which was like, where did all that money go? So I'd be very hesitant to give them my money again, just on the sound of the reaction they got to that Kickstarter.
Have there been many sort of, like, what's the poster child for Kickstarter video games yet? Have we really
I'm
seen...
I'm pretty sure Double Fine was the first to do it. Wasteland 2 is another example of...
That was an excellent
game. Yeah, and I know that everyone was really happy with that.
I kind of agree with Chris in that about resisting the urge to think out for something for Double Fine. Because I think I've moaned to you before, Christoph, about my experiences on crowdfunding, and a lot of the times... I'm not going to name names, but some
stuff... No, go and do it.
Yeah, some stuff I still haven't received.
Yeah, do the initials.
We've talked about this before.
Some stuff I still haven't received. Some stuff took 2 years. Some took 5 years.
You know who you
are. And it's like... Yeah, it's a bit... Like, I understand where it comes from. Okay, I'm waiting until I got that, and then I'm never doing that one again type thing.
I've heard some people kind of frame it, and I tend to agree with this. I'm not a big crowdfunding guy. Usually fairly cynical towards it, but they said, look, at best it's a donation. If you get something back, that's awesome. But a lot of the right kind of attitude to go into it is, I'm giving them money, I may not get anything back.
Yeah, but that's an attitude very few people have when they contribute to Kickstarter. They think, I'm giving you money, I want something
Oh, totally.
See, with me, I usually just back the amount where it's, you get a copy of the game. And usually a lot of times, if they manage it properly, that one will be that pledge item will probably be like if it's a CD from a musician, $20-25 or something to get that, plus shipping. And that's almost how much it costs to buy a CD. Anyway.
Yeah, so you're just investing in the product before it's...
Yeah, so it's almost like doing a lay-by.
And you usually get Kickstarter exclusive bonuses with that as well. Like Adam and I, my housemate, back a lot of board games and we get extra stuff like that. But I try to go for ones that look trustworthy. And just because of how badly the Broken Age Kickstarter ended up culminating, I wouldn't give Broken Age, I wouldn't give Double Fine my money in a hurry.
In regards to the comment, I think a lot of, in regards to people bitching about the ending of the game, I kind of find it The weight is fair enough. I think the ending is kind of funny, given that Tim Schafer has a reputation of having weird, like, non kind of open ended games. I like his games, but all of them I played have no, I wouldn't say they had great endings.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. As things like Mass Effect 3 have shown, the ending is not everything. But the problem was the first half was apparently so good. Like, I haven't played it, but it was apparently so good.
Yeah, the first half was really good.
Really, really good. And then the second one, again, it was just, there's nothing new. And it was just it was a reversal of the main plot of the first half.
I personally think it worked. Like, in terms of the actual game, I have no issues. Admittedly, the two-year wait is something to complain about. But I think, and maybe this is part of the issue with crowdfunding, when it's people who don't know how to make something hopping in, and wanting a say in the process, that can be problematic, given how, my understanding is, it's really hard to make video games. Now, obviously, Tim Schafer should be able to make a timeline he can follow. He's been doing this for a while.
But maybe that's something we just have to get used to. Like, when you are crowdfunding things, they go, look, this is a labour of love.
Totally.
And it's going to be dropping. It is going to be dropping every 2 years. So when it comes along, you're like, oh, that's right. That thing I was still into, let's see if I'm still into it. And by that stage, you may or may not still be into the actual thing that you want. I mean, that's the risk. But
the only problem is that it wasn't how the original game was advertised.
Yeah.
As far as I understand it, that's not how it was advertised.
Well, I kind of get annoyed with it, because it's like, you know, you give us this money to do this thing. It's like, no. You're the one going into a business venture. You take the risk. You do it.
Mm.
You come ready to play, ready to greet the market. And we'll, like, the consumers will decide whether it lives or dies, not we'll drag you all along the way, teasing, we're getting there, and you're like, this just isn't fair anymore. I wish you just had given me the option one day to lay down $60 for yes or no, and it's a bit unfair.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of my initial kind of criticisms towards crowdfunding, is when, admittedly, if it's large amounts of money, you couldn't procure yourself, that's fair enough, but when it's, especially in certain genres of stuff, where the budgets aren't as big, when it's someone asking for $5,000 or $6,000, it's like, that's not that hard to procure. You know, if you don't want to believe in your product to put that money towards it, why should I? And I guess
exactly. It's, you know, and it's like the old sort of indie filmmakers, like, you know, maxing out credit cards just to get their thing
Kevin
done.
Kevin Smith, who was like $50,000 in debt or something after Clerks,
but he took the chance to put it out there. Mm. And I think that's the problem with these people. They go, oh well, you know, as a studio, we may not be successful. I'm like, well, sorry, that's the risk. Like, that's the marketplace. That can happen. If your idea is good enough, sell it to one of the bigger, like, I don't know. It's a tricky situation.
Anyway, why don't we wrap it up there? Because I feel like this is part of a much bigger conversation.
Maybe that should be a spoiler cast as well.
I feel like that might
spoilers for Kickstarter. It doesn't always work out well.
I feel like, that might need to be a discussion topic
and
for another time.
Billy will name those names in the next episode.
Just check the show notes.
Maybe we should make it a subscriber-only podcast, so only our most trusted fans can listen to it.
All right, guys, we're going to have a quick break, and then we're going to be back with Read, Watch, Play. Guys, so now we're going to jump into Read, Watch, Play. So what we're doing for this Read, Watch, Play segment is we're going to be talking about what we've been obviously reading, watching, playing recently. Plus, we're also going to throw in some of our top picks for each of those categories. Sorry, for the year. So, Chris, do you want to hit us off?
So hang on, we're doing what we're reading now first.
Yeah,
and
so
then
we'll do read first.
Okay, so I've been reading. I'm really neck deep in How Star Wars Conquered the Universe, which is a non-fiction book by Chris Taylor. Not the Chris Taylor from The Chaser. It's the Chris Taylor who's the UK journalist. I got really excited when I saw that was the author. I'm like, wow, The Chaser wrote another book. No, it's basically, it works in two streams. One of them is a history of how George Lucas got started in film and eventually made Star Wars. And the other half is about the impact Star Wars has had since it came out, and how things like the Death Star petition to the White House and the Jedi religion on the UK census forms all came to be. It's a really good read. I think I'm about a year late to the party on that one, because I think it was a 2014 release, but highly recommended for film buffs, for anyone who's into Star Wars, anyone who's into cultural studies. Really, really good book. And I've also been catching up on One Punch Man and Attack on Titan, the mangas.
So
They're good.
I haven't read One Punch Man, but I watched the anime, right. And it's pretty insane.
It's fun. It's very Monster of the Week where I'm at now, but apparently there's a greater plot that emerges. I've only read the first two.
The anime is very similar as well.
Yeah. That's what I've heard.
Isn't there a live action?
Of One Punch Man? I don't think so, because just done the anime's first season's only just concluded.
Okay.
But the manga's really, it's good fun, it's very light, very, very, very funny.
Because you're much more into manga and anime than me, Chris. How do you appreciate it more because it riffs on a lot of those themes? I picked up on a little bit of it.
See, I didn't really look at it very critically, I just read it because it was a bit of fun. Like, normally, because I'm an academic, the critic brain never goes off. But with One Punch Man, I just kind of read it and went, this is fun. Went, this is fun. Sorry, that's not a very deep answer.
Maybe it comes across more in the anime, but it really takes a piss out of stuff like Dragon Ball Z. And
I definitely got that, and I got quite a few cracks at like the kaiju genre and Godzilla and all that kind of thing.
And how you get like a 5-minute backstory about this villain, how he became so powerful, and then the main guy will just like kill him with one punch.
Yeah, or my favorite bit where one of the sidekicks explains his life story, but whereas in another manga you'd have like the visualization of that history and everything. In the comic, he's just talking to the hero, and the hero's like, dude, you're talking, shut up. Stop with the exposition, because you're boring the crap out of me. I don't know, I think it's fun. And Attack on Titan, where I'm at now, I just finished volume 17, and holy shit, things are happening.
Is that the latest?
That's volume? The latest, okay. The latest in English. I'm not up to date with the Japanese / slightly less than legal English versions, but no, 17 was very good, and I still love that manga to death.
Awesome. Well, Billy, do you want to jump in for read?
What, reading now or best of?
Feel free to do a bit of both.
Look, I mean, I've just been reading the Stock Standard Marvel stuff, the new stuff that's come out. I am close to dropping a few issues now that we're at issues 3 and 4 into the new Marvel.
What's been good in that? Because I did a guide last year about what I thought would be crap and what would be great, and I'm interested to see where the overlap is.
Miss Marvel's good.
Yeah.
That's been pretty consistently good.
Yeah, that was one of my best ofs of this year, Miss Marvel.
That was fantastic last year.
Spider-Man's good, but that's coming out fortnightly, which is a bit annoying on the coinage
side of things.
Which Spider-Man, though, because there are like three.
Yeah, like it's the stock standard Peter Parker Amazing Spider-Man. Right.
And he's going global? Was that of what's going on?
Yeah, so pretty much what happens. He's got his own company, and he's like a globe. He's almost like got his own prop. Yeah, he's like
Spider-Man. It's kind of a Batman, Tony Stark.
But it works. It's really good.
Dan Slott's really good at.
He's trying new things. That's the thing. And it's kind of working.
He's really good at picking up ideas that sound terrible on paper and making them work on the page.
It sounds almost Batman Incorporated-y.
Yeah, it is a bit like that.
I was going to say,
he's getting all these heroes that are like, you know, all these B-list mates over the, like, you know, 50 plus years or something? I don't know.
He's got his own international club of heroes.
I mean, the Prowler. Like, a B-list fan, and he's, like, employed him.
The Prowler sounds more like a sex offender than a Marvel hero.
And he's employed him to, like, help out, like, and pretend to be Spider-Man if he needs him to go over there type thing.
What's the Prowler's, like, special
He's a cat burglar.
I'm not reading it.
He's got no superpowers or anything like that.
Of course not.
We're done here.
No, look, I mean, there is a lot that's good. I mean, I could do a list.
How is Mark Waid's Avengers in particular? Because I think.
So many Avengers.
It's called All New, All Different Avengers. It's like Falcon as Cap, Lady Thor.
I've not actually read that.
Because that, I like Mark Waid.
Slightly similar to the ones you know.
From what I can tell from that
but give us money.
Yeah.
From what I can tell of that Mark Waid one, it's very much an all age. It's meant to be an all ages and draw everyone in. And look, I usually like lots of Mark Waid stuff.
I adore Mark Waid.
Yeah.
I feel Mark Waid's one of those writers where he's consistently good, but he writes such a volume that I just...
Yeah.
I can never keep up with it all.
Yeah, it's because you get in trade.
He had a good artist for that one, too. He had Alex Ross on covers, which looked amazing, because Alex Ross can do no wrong, but he had someone fairly high up. Might have been Salvador LaRocca, maybe? Someone, and it looked like a really good combo.
I'm surprised Ross was working on the covers on a Waid book, given that they had a big dispute after Kingdom Come.
Pretty sure that was Ross, wasn't it?
Not sure.
I know he did a really gorgeous... listeners, go out and find there's a cover of Falcon as Captain America and Lady Thor making out while flying. And it's really gorgeous because it's an Alex Ross cover. I think it's for like the I think it's for the Captain America ongoing, but it's just a gorgeous like okay. It just emphasizes why Alex Ross is the best.
Are you still sticking with Doctor Strange because we're talking about that?
Yes, I am. Doctor Strange is good.
Okay, it's so how many issues in are you at this point?
It's up to issue 4. Okay. Because I get my comics fortnightly, I'm a bit behind, so I'm going to get it this week, issues 3 and 4.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. The other ones that are good is from Marvel, Iron Man. It's by Bendis.
Really? So it is good?
It's not bad.
Bendis is notoriously hit and miss.
He's talky, with caution.
Very talky.
Yeah, he has simultaneously written some of like the best, most influential stuff and some of the most like throwaway garbage you can imagine.
At least he's off X-Men now.
Yeah. What? Hey,
Depending on which Bendis titles are good and bad depends very much on who you talk to.
Yes.
I'm enjoying all new X-Men as well. Are they from the new writer. I can't remember what his name is at the moment. But they've taken over. It's like a road trip with all the time displaced young
X-Men. In the combi van.
Yes.
Oh, that looks amazing.
In a combi van that's bigger on the inside.
That it's looks like amazing.
A combi van that's almost like a TARDIS.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. So, yeah. In regards to Best Of, Miss Marvel, as I said, Saga, which continues to be good.
Okay. It's interesting because I know you and Chris both really liked where it left off at the last... Oh, but you're doing issue to issue, aren't you?
Keep in mind, don't spoil for me.
That's right,
No, I'm behind 2 issues. I need to...
I make an occasion whenever a trade comes out, I buy it, and then I'll, like, sit at home that evening with a really big glass of scotch and just read it as an experience.
Nice.
Which sounds really wanky, but...
No.
Because I love Saga so much.
The other books that I've been enjoying are Sex Criminals.
Yeah.
Which is still good.
Is that in its third arc?
Yes.
Okay.
It's just started.
The third arc.
The Wicked and the Divine, which I need to catch up on, but from what I've read of 2015, it was good. Tokyo Ghost.
Have you read much of that yet?
3 issues, but from what I looked at, I enjoyed it, and I really do like the art.
I was going to... Because are you a big Remender guy? He's, again, very... He rubs a lot of people the wrong way.
I'm a big Remender guy, and I really like the art as well.
Well, Sean Murphy is really, really good.
He's really good. Dave 2, which I enjoyed. It was a sequel to Dave.
That's right. Again, so worth checking out?
Yeah, definitely worth checking out. And the Star Wars and Darth Vader books.
The Darth Vader book is awesome. I love it.
Is that Gillian? Karen?
It's Karen. Kieran Gillian and Darth Vader. And Salvador Larocca.
Someone else is doing Star Wars. But pretty much he does...
It's not Rucker.
Jason Aaron's on Star Wars. Rucker did Shattered Empire.
Okay, and that's right. Charles Soule's doing Lando.
I'm not reading Lando, though.
I feel like
it's not very...
Yeah. I don't want to like piss off Star Wars fans, but I feel like at that point you may be scraping the barrel a little.
Yeah.
Whoa.
All right.
let's move on from that.
Yes.
No, I just want to chime in as well. The Star Wars ongoing and the Darth Vader ongoing are really bloody good. Like, better than I thought they'd be.
They're currently in the first ever crossover of the comics, which is cool. Interesting. Darth Vader and Star Wars. It's called Vader Down. So Vader's been shot down.
Vader in Star Wars will never work. Like, what are they doing? Who are they getting?
Vader's been shot down. It's all like the rebels are trying to take him down. It's pretty cool.
I see how the down plays into it. Really subtle. Yeah. Really. Yeah. As always, comics are the medium of subtlety.
I'm working on a review of the first two volumes of... the first volume of Star Wars of Darth Vader and the volume of Shattered Empire, but... Go out and read them, especially read Darth Vader, because it's like a really twisted take on Doctor Who, because he like assembles a team of companions to help him win back the Emperor's favor after the Death Star is destroyed.
Yeah, it's really good.
Really good.
Because he had a lot of explaining to do.
Oh, the Emperor is super pissed at him, and he's like, I'm going to go hire a new apprentice now. You can try and beat them, or you can just die and bugger off.
Why can I see the Emperor stopping like... No, seriously, have you seen the numbers on this? Are we like, I get that something came up, but look at it. Like this, I still owe this money.
Yeah.
Like this much.
Those slave Wookiees don't pay themselves.
I have to find this money somewhere.
I did like that about the expanded universe, how like they pretty much said like, the Empire was like not paying his funds.
Yeah.
Like, it was all on credit type
shit.
Yeah.
Did you ever read the Death Star book in the old continuity?
No.
Was it from the Death Star's perspective?
Yeah.
I'm so no, lonely.
No, it was...
None of the other moons like
it. It was, like, all about the team who built moon. It and, like, the gunner and everything. And then they were like, yeah, the Emperor is totally in debt doing this. This is... And a lot of characters are like, this is an insane idea, making a giant gun when we could, for the same money, have, like, a fleet of Star Destroyers.
Who ever said the EU got bloated?
Oh, man.
I'm so glad that they're like, how can we relate to broke nerds? Let's put the Emperor in debt.
Yeah. Been there, bro.
So, Stu, do you have a read for us this week?
No.
Or a best of?
No.
What
a
surprise.
No, but I actually be launching for this year of doing a book a month. So
oh, wow.
Haven't nice. Started anything yet, so the clock is ticking.
Is there a genre, just in case our listeners have suggestions of something you might like to read?
Hello?
Exclusively Milton.
Yeah. I'm trying to branch out, all right?
But, yeah, he's going into Harlequin this year.
Yeah. No, like, I usually like things like Jean Le Carre, that sort of spy genre, which I'm trying to stay away from because it's like you feel yourself going back to it and you're like, no, read in it, like, read like, an adult book. Yeah. Like, read something else. That, like, but so.
Jean Le Carre is pretty adult.
Yeah, but it's, you know.
Have you ever read the Bond books?
I've got
a bit of a hard slog.
Yeah.
I've been told that their portrayal of women isn't excellent.
Fleming had some interesting ideas about the world.
So I'm going to, start to branch out.
He would not have been good to have a drink with.
I will have more to report back on now in this here new year.
Nice. So, well, Chris, quickly before we go to me, do you have anything that's your pick of the year that you want to do? That was, just maybe one or two that you want to shout out to.
Well, in comics, I kind of listed a lot of my favourite stuff in a post, which was just the top 10-ish things that I liked of everything. But for books, I think Brandon Sanderson's Shadows of Self was really good. A lot of stuff I read last year wasn't stuff that was released in the year. It was all catching up, because I only really read new stuff in like the latter half of the year. Saga, as Billy said, was really good. The Star Wars comics were really good. Chew was really good. I read the 5th Omnivore edition, which was easily one of the best books I read last year.
It kind of hasn't really led up in terms of, like, each kind of trade I've read has been consistently good. It hasn't really had a slump.
Yeah.
Like a lot of other series,
I've never been bored reading. Like, Saga occasionally has very brief moments where I get a little, like, okay, move on to the next thing.
I definitely felt Chew like that never. In the latest trade.
Yeah. Chew never has that for me. I really enjoy it. No, Ms. Marvel was good. Jason Aaron's Lady Thor was really good, on point. And what else have I read? East of West was good. I don't know. I feel really uninteresting because I'm trying to remember. I didn't read many comics last year, so I've got to fix that this year.
There are so many, and I'll quickly... I think a top five on the site, but I'll quickly mention one that I didn't get to mention in the post, and that was Copperhead, which I picked up the first trade earlier in the year. It didn't really grab me. I'd heard great things about it. I was kind of on the fence. And then the second trade really kind of solidified the concept and the character interactions. So it's like a Western kind of fantasy. I feel like it maybe takes a few notes from Firefly tonally, but it very much does its own thing. It's about a sheriff in this backwoods town on this backwater mining planet. And he's trying to keep order. And basically the deputy's out to get a job and her vengeful ex-husband is trying to get revenge, and all these sort of elements are conspiring against her, and she's trying to kind of hold it all together, which doesn't really do the series justice, that description, but it's really good, and I'd highly recommend that. Another book I'd quickly like to mention, because it got me out of nowhere, was We Can Never Go Home, which is from Black Mask Studio, which is basically a publisher that tries to do, like, edgy comics. A lot of it's played are quite edgy, which sound like they're going to be bad, but a lot of them are actually really good, really sincere, and, We Can Never Go Home is basically about two teenage runaways, one of whom has superpowers. But it kind of channels a lot of the cool kind of outcast and everyone's against us sort of elements that made the X-Men good before they got so gosh darn convoluted.
I read your review of that. It actually sounds like a really good book.
Yeah, and the art, for a smaller book, the art is incredibly solid.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I can't remember the creative team because there's like several artists and colorists and writers and everything. But yeah, from Black Mask Studios, We Can Never Go Home, I would highly recommend.
Nice.
Well, why don't we move on to watch, and we'll start with Stu, because this is your strong suit.
I posted,
we'll be here for a while, folks.
I posted my top 10 on the site and my honourable mentions. But of late, things that are still available in cinemas now, like over the Christmas break, I racked up 7 viewings of Force Awakens.
You're an animal, Stu. Like, 3 to me is excessive, 7.
Can I just tell you, you put up a post, I think, when you did 6. You may have done 7 and I missed it, but you put up a post of 6, and a whole lot of my friends and my housemates who are on the page just comment on, like, I seem way more saner as a Star Wars fan compared to you who's seen it half a dozen times.
But I think it's hard. It's hard when something that you love is out, and if you get downtime, you're like, huh, I could just go watch Star Wars.
Yeah.
I could just be a kid for 2 hours.
Yeah, and it's fun. So, and it just feels good.
Yeah.
So, been watching that. But things worth checking out at the moment. The Revenant dropped yesterday.
Have you checked it out yet?
Yeah, I've seen it twice.
Oh, wow. Not 7 times?
No, not yet. I'm getting there. It's a weird sort of film. It's absolutely stunning to look at.
Because it's from the director who did Birdman?
Yeah, Alejandro Iñárritu, which it's got a lot of the same problems as Birdman. Like, I think the problem I'm wrestling with his work, which I think he makes really interesting films, but I think it lacks a bit of sincerity. He sort of goes for what feels a little bit style over substance.
Mm.
So, like, he'll have an idea and not really put any sort of anything personal or anything.
Yeah, or if there's just sort of a bit too much crammed in. But okay. In this, it's sort of set in a very rugged time, in sort of that sort of frontier style time in America. When it's violent, it's super, super violent and gory, and but it's short, sharp bursts of violence, and then long, extended times of sort of gorgeous shots of nature, which is sort of like Terrence Malick style, like, you know, shooting up through foliage, looking at the sun, and, you know, just shots of icicles dripping, and it works. Like, it's sort of a real sort of, at times, like a real meditative kind of thing.
Interesting.
Yeah, really stunning, and it's some interesting stories coming about, like the baking of behind scenes. Like, everyone was just miserable, and look at the conditions they were filming in, were pretty intense.
Mm.
I heard Donald Gleason on a podcast saying that it was just freezing.
Yeah, and, like, he's great in it. Like, all the performances are really solid. Like, DiCaprio, I think out of my first screening, I more or less said the Academy Award is his to lose until we see... he'll probably get robbed by Eddie Redmayne in The Danish Girl, which, funnily enough, Eddie Redmayne robbed Michael Keaton last year in the Iñárritu film Birdman for best actor as well.
Because he did
the theory of everything.
The Stephen Hawking film, yeah.
My money is on the bear winning.
that actual sequence that got a lot of the press about is really impressive. Like, there's a bear attack scene in it, and it's just... It's phenomenal.
Is it in your top 10 bear attack scenes?
It would be. I dare say top 5.
I mean, talk about nerve.
Yeah.
Bear attack.
I've only really... And the other 9 are just...
You've been to Oxford Street.
That's true. the other 9 are just Yogi taking on various picnic baskets.
Man, I'm glad he got off the mat.
So that's as sort of like massive scale, like that's at one end. Another sweet little film is the Bellier Family, which is a French film. About a young girl. It's sort of on the rural, on the outskirts of Paris, sort of in the rural areas of France, whose her brother and both her parents are deaf, and she gets a chance to attend a rather exclusive school for singing. So it's just looking at her life as like what's and it's just a really that's playing at Dendy at the moment. It's just a really sort of sweet coming of age tale. And all the challenges, both for the parents having to let her go, being that she's their only source of dealing with the outside world in terms of vocally, but then her having to sort of outgrow her parents' needs.
Mm.
Like it's you know, a bit of a heart-wrenching tale.
Sounds like a Kleenex film.
Yeah. And one I checked out just the other night, which had a limited run last year and I missed it, but luckily it's playing. It's got a couple more sessions lined up at the Golden Age Cinema here in Sydney on Commonwealth Street, Surry Hills, is Tangerine. And this thing, it was just phenomenal. It's Got dubbed the iPhone movie because it's like it was filmed.
That's right. You told us kind of the elevator pitch or whatever.
It's budget of $100,000. Filmed on like a tricked out iPhone, like it had some modification, like it had something done to the lenses and everything to help it.
Yeah.
But it's about basically starts with two transgender prostitutes in LA on Christmas Eve having a conversation in a donut shop. One of them says, who's just one girl, Cindy, has just got out of jail where she's been for 28 days, and she's talking to her friend and says, "Oh, I'm about to leave my boyfriend, who's actually her pimp." And the other one says, "Oh, well, yeah, it's about time you left his cheating ass." And she sort of says, "Well, I'm sorry, what?" don't you know he's been cheating on you this whole time? And she just goes on a tirade across LA to track down the woman that he's been having the affair with, and it's just like calamity ensues.
It sounds like a comedy of errors.
Oh, and I keep saying, if Die Hard's a Christmas film, then this is my new Christmas film, because it's got the Christmas spirit. But it's absolutely bizarre slice of life stuff.
That's a problem with most Christmas movies, not enough pimps.
Exactly.
Transgender
prostitutes. Yeah.
This is why you're not allowed to be a film reviewer, Christmas.
But super intense, and it's just, it's just amazing what you can do with the resources that you have. And having the size of the iPhone and the size of the camera, the places they can, like, there's a lot of sort of scenes in cubicles and really cramped spaces.
Is there a lot of, like, guerrilla filming in terms of, like, them sort of out in public and just...
Yeah, a lot of, like, you know, just sitting at a bus stop and, like, a bus will turn up and you sort of don't get the scene. It'd be hard to tell if everyone actually knew a film was being made because there's just someone with a phone, like... But it's... Yeah, so they're sort of my picks at the moment. So Tangerine, you'd have to it should be out like on DVD soon, but that's one worth sort of hunting around for if you get the chance.
Yeah.
But yeah, The Revenant's probably worth checking out.
Well, do we want to move on to Chris's watch?
My watch recently, what have I been watching? I haven't really been watching, well, apart from Star Wars, obviously. Which I've only seen twice, and people are always really shocked when I say that I've only seen it.
Self-restraint.
You've barely seen it.
Yeah, I know, right? I'm not a true fan.
You could learn something.
It's mostly just time, because I've been so busy doing my thesis and so on. But if anyone gets the chance to see it in IMAX, do it. Because the IMAX at Darling Harbour.
That's my next viewing.
It's incredible.
Maybe my next two viewings.
You really should.
Yeah.
It's kind of full up at the moment, which I guess is good because the movie's making money, but it's bad because you can't get a good seat. But
Star Wars, it's making money?
I know, right?
And it wasn't filmed on an iPhone for 100 pounds.
But definitely go
no
see...
No pimps either.
Definitely go see that at IMAX if you can, but I thought it was just a great movie. In terms of stuff for the year, as well as Star Wars, as well as like Avengers 2, I didn't really see many films, but one film I want to really shine a light on that I feel is underappreciated is Spectre. I really liked Spectre.
Okay.
It is not good. It is not as good as Skyfall. It is not the best Bond film ever.
Not heaps of love going around for Spectre.
I really liked it.
Shine a light on like that small indie film. That small James Bond indie film.
You need to bone Daniel Craig.
Okay. But my point was, even though it made, I think, in the end, over $850 million, it was still like really critically panned by a lot of famous people. And I just think it was fun.
I enjoy it. I saw it twice. And while I was in it, I'm in a Bond film and I was having fun.
Yeah, and that's how I felt.
But I think I don't know if it keeps or has some of those iconic moments like other things in the Craig films.
No, not at all. And friggin' Skyfall is absolutely is for me the peak of Daniel Craig's run thus far.
Yeah.
But no, the Spectre, it still has Leia Seydoux,
yep,
who is an incredible actress and did her role really well. She was awesome.
Yep.
Christoph Waltz is the villain. Christoph Waltz, you can't not love Christoph Waltz.
Did we get Christoph Waltz or did we get his I'm Christoph Waltz villain?
Kind of like the default setting?
We got Christoph Waltz when he's not in a Tarantino film.
Yeah,
because he just ascends, his performance just goes up a few notches when he's in a Tarantino film.
I don't know. Like, I got a sense that he didn't actually, as a villain, get to do much.
No.
Like, he didn't, he sort of, he sort of said some scary things, but didn't... I don't know if he brought anything too dangerous or unpredictable or... Not, maybe he doesn't need to,
but... Probably not, but he was still a very magnetic presence in that film, I felt.
I thought the build-up to... Look, it's in a month. Like, more than a
it's
month.
It's been 2 months.
Yeah, we could talk about it, right? Can't we?
Spoilers for Spectre, ladies and gentlemen.
Like, he becomes Blofeld. So...
Yeah.
So I thought the build-up to that...
It was a bit Khan.
It took too long.
It was a bit Khan. It was a bit, he's not Khan, he's Khan.
Yeah, that. But I thought it took too long to get there. Like, it could have been 20 minutes less.
Yeah. And I think once you get there, you sort of went, okay. Like,
I felt the whole... What's next? Like, near the end, with the explosion and everything, the whole Scar and eye thing that Blofeld has in the original films, I thought that was very...
On the nose.
Hammed in.
But I'd be happy to see... Again, if we're now looking at the film, if that's Craig's last, I would like to see Walt's back as the antagonist.
He might give that movie to the next one.
Like, if he can be the bridge, and then I'd like everyone else to carry forward with a new. If Bond's going to change, keep Ralph Fiennes, keep everyone, keep Moneypenny the same, keep everyone.
I think. If this is the end of Craig, it was a good end. Like, I saw the end of that film where they drive off in the Aston Martin. I just thought, yep, that's a good end. That we can leave it there and move on.
I kind of agree with Stu in the sense that I feel like the supporting cast was really strong. Craig, to me, looked like he was ready to move on, and I felt like that did affect his performance. I'm not admittedly, I didn't enjoy the film just because I'm not a James Bond guy, but it just... So... Take what I say with a grain of salt, but he did seem just tired.
He looked very disinterested.
Well, I think compared to Skyfall. I think and I think the problem is though now, like culturally, I think we're done with the sort of the chauvinistic alcoholic, and I think now we sort of have to make a decision. Right, that's not Bond anymore, and the next generation is going to find a new way to have the characteristics of Bond. Like Bond is basic for me anyway is. He's kind of one step behind everyone else. He's kind of a little bit slower, kind of a little bit out, a little bit on the outside all the time. But then when needed, he can rise above, like consistently can keep going when others can't. And I think we don't need all that, especially with, I think the importance of a character like Bond changing into what that would mean for sort of equality going forward. And we've seen a bit of it in, like we've seen a little bit of it in Craig's films of like, you know, people pointing out, oh, all your women always die and you use, they're just, what do you care? Yeah. They're disposable anyway. Sort of tongue in cheek a bit at the character, but I wouldn't mind seeing what we can do going forward with him.
Definitely.
What I can do. Well, I intend to. When I get my hands on the franchise.
So. Yeah.
If when you get your hands on Daniel Craig.
Everyone to just kickstart Stu's purchase of the Bond franchise.
Well, hey, MGM went near bankrupt a few years back and nearly lost the franchise, so it could happen again.
That's when good strikes. Yeah.
I just want to say as like a closing remark on James Bond. I really want Idris Elba to be James Bond.
He's too old. He's too old now.
Bull hooey.
For the sake of for the sake of the franchise, Idris Elba's nearly 50. If they were to get four, like you're going to have a
is ages.
Given how stunt heavy.
I'm sorry. I agree with Sue. He's too old.
That said, it would be great if they got an actor of color. I think that would be enough.
Yeah, no, would I totally support
a
that.
A way to kind of re-energize what is seen as an old, outdated kind of franchise in some ways.
Would also reflect, like, England today. Like, England, like, as always, it would be time for that. If anyone's seen my pick, he's actually in new Star Wars film, is...
Dominic Gleeson.
No, Risa Ahmed. He was in Nightcrawler. Did you watch Nightcrawler?
Yeah, I watched Nightcrawler.
He was the assistant...
Yeah.
I think he'd be brilliant as a...
Who was he in Star Wars?
No, he's in Rogue One. Is he going to be in
Rogue
One?
Oh, he's in Rogue One. Right. Okay.
But I think he would just... Would strike the right balance between... But I love... Idris Elba would be awesome. Like,
he's a fine actor.
He's an imposing figure, and you wouldn't mess with him.
We've got him as Bond in Luther.
Touché.
just given that time is marching on, I'll quickly jump into... My Watch, if that's all right, Billy, which I'm just going to be quick. Jessica Jones was definitely a standout for me. I wasn't sure what to expect from it. You know, shows with a female lead unfortunately haven't always been given, you know, the script and that they deserve, and Jessica Jones definitely was given that. It was a really, really good show.
Very nuanced.
100%. You know what? Someone pointed out to me that the thing they really enjoyed about it was the fact that it's the only show I can think of where all the sort of villain roles, which are usually given to, you know, female characters and love interest roles, are all played by men. And you don't even, it's so well written that it doesn't feel on the nose or forced. It just, it works.
Mm.
Anyway, Billy, we'll move on to you.
Okay. I've got two, movies and TV. For movies, I've got The Martian.
Okay. It was a good movie.
Yeah.
But I guess I was thinking the other day, I forgot, there were so many big, massively good movies this year that I forgot that, Avengers 2 came out this year.
Yeah, I know.
So I'm impressed that The Martian kind of stands out.
Well, Avengers 2 isn't in my top.
It is?
It isn't.
It isn't. Okay, fair enough.
Ex Machina. Okay. I really enjoyed Ex Machina. Yeah, it's amazing.
Everyone's raving about it. Yeah. I need to check it out.
Prequel to Force Awakens, kind of.
Yeah,
because that's Domhnall Gleeson again.
Yeah, and Oscar Isaac.
And Oscar Isaac.
Okay.
Yeah. And one of the lamps in that was actually one of the lamps in Force Awakens. Yeah, small role.
And one of the robots.
He's in Jakku, yeah.
Unfortunately, I couldn't get the same power outlet. Yeah. It was busy in another film.
Mad Max Fury Road?
Yeah.
No.
I saw that for the first time the other night. That was fun.
Good film.
Yeah,
who would have thought that I certainly didn't think it was going to be any good.
A sequel from, what, 20 years?
Who would have thought that's made by, a 71-year-old man and his 73-year-old cinematographer?
So yeah. And it just is, a masterclass in how to make a movie, really.
And again, it's a masterclass in just show, don't tell.
Oh.
Don't. Just trust your audience that they're going to catch up.
There's no dialogue for the first kind of 30 to 40 minutes.
And all you know is that the guy that's been caught didn't want to get caught, and he's doing everything he can to get away.
Yeah. That's it.
That's all I need.
Yeah.
Also, as a pointer to people like Hasbro who want to talk about not having female protagonists in their merchandising and things, Furiosa is now the most famous movie heroine of all time.
Well, before Rey, it was her, and we've got both ends of the scale.
Yeah.
Like,
see, this is what happens when you praise the fact that a woman is the lead of your action film that men are going to see, because she was awesome. Charlize Theron was amazing in that film.
But let's talk like you, and before you know it, they'll have equal footing, all right? And we can't have that in movies. You know, we can't turn it back.
Because then we might have to do things, Chris. I might have to put pants on when I go to the same
room. Join a men's race.
Exactly. But where does it end? I know.
She was the protagonist of Fury Road way more than Tom Hardy was, I think.
Even Alicia Vikander in Ex Machina, that was a phenomenal performance for her this year.
Was equal.
Yeah, and I think she had the tougher. I actually hope that sort of. I think Carol's going to steal all the sort of award buzz, but I hope she doesn't slip through the cracks for that role.
I've got two more films that I liked, and I've got some notable mentions.
Yeah, jump on
Force Awakens, obviously.
Yeah, I feel like that was that's on everyone's
list. That little film.
And Ant-Man.
that indie gem.
And Ant-Man.
Yeah. I still haven't
I liked that. Ant-Man.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people didn't. I don't understand why. Okay. It's just a heist film. As the first heist film for Marvel, and it was actually pretty good.
Plus, a nice little film date for us.
Yes,
maybe that was what kind of elevated up.
Let's not rule it out.
It was Stu and didn't enjoy the film. I liked it. You can't not like Paul Rudd.
To be fair, it is an experience seeing a film with Stu.
Yeah. My notable mentions: Spectre, obviously, Avengers 2, Mission Impossible: Rogue Nation.
So good.
I preferred Rogue Nation to the previous one.
Yeah.
Over the previous one.
Ghost Protocol. Yeah.
Ghost Protocol was really good, though.
Yeah. Wow. Ghost Protocol was good. This one was more fun.
The motorbike chase is amazing in this.
Yeah. Yeah. And one more film.
Yeah.
I got to give a notable mention to Fast and Furious 7. I'm sorry. Do not start with me, Chris. We're going to have this debate another time.
The looks he's getting from Chris. Combust.
It popped up on my list too this year on my worst of. So it's all right.
I will admit it's a crap film.
Fast and Furious sucks.
Yeah, I know that, but Fast and Furious gives me what I want. The cars, dudes driving them, chicks driving them, and, you know, action. It's not trying to be something that it's not. It's not trying to be a, you know,
I think
Oscar-winning film. It's like we're just driving cars.
Oh no! But didn't you
hear
Vin Diesel saying it should win an Oscar before? Because he's an idiot.
Just quickly, that I loved six for I love Fast and Furious 6, and I thought I'm back on. I fell off again for 7, But I think it's very much like Mission Impossible, just it's another team movie and they're doing different things. I will watch that when it drops every 14 months or every 18 months. I'll watch both franchises and keep going. And I'll go, if I go in and go, right, this one didn't work, the next one might, but, you know, I'd find, except it makes no, the Paul Walker send-off, I know he passed away, but that didn't make much sense in the actual film. But
no, it didn't make much sense, but I liked the Paul Walker send-off thing. That was the other thing I liked. I'll quickly do TV. So Orange is the New Black, the new season. It was much better than the previous season.
Yes, okay. Definitely.
So much more. Jessica Jones, like you said. Mm. The Flash is really, 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 really good.
Season 2's, it's certainly
better. There's a lot of, like, I mean, my dad, who, you know, my dad's like 60, he's saying there's a lot of people. So, I mean, it is, I know it's jarring some people like that about it. But, and the last one, Broad City. It's an amazing TV
show. I've heard a lot of good things about
it. It's really, really, really good. I cannot recommend it high enough.
Just because we're running out of time, we'll jump into play. So we'll jump into play quickly. So, Chris, do you want to kick us off for play?
Witcher 3.
You're wearing a Witcher 3 shirt. Witcher 3. That was fairly predictable.
Game of the year, all of the awards, 10
really?
Out of 10.
Really? So for you, it's better than Fallout?
Yep.
4. Okay.
By a head and a foot.
Because I agree with you, but I'm not a big Fallout guy. So
Fallout 4 for me is a close second. I played a lot more games this year than I did the year before because 2014 sucked for games.
It wasn't
I had
a good
things
year.
Like Fallout 4, things like Just Cause 3, Metal Gear Solid 5. Batman. They're all really good. Batman Arkham Knight.
Which was almost, for me, overshadowed by the fact that The Witcher 3 was so good.
I actually stopped. I played the main plot of Arkham Knight. I didn't get the ending because you've got to go do like all the side quests for that.
Yeah. Did you guys catch Metal Gear as well? Or?
Yeah, Chris I did Metal Gear. It was really... It's a great game. It's a terrible story.
Yeah.
Really, really, really excellent gameplay, but the story's crap. But Witcher 3, the best of the year.
I've heard The Witcher 3 was quite good.
It was pretty alright.
Yeah. I'm going to jump to Billy because I'm just going to be a parroting Chris.
Okay, so like with me, I don't play like 20 games every year. I usually play about 4 or 5. I didn't play Witcher 3, but I got my.
It's very good.
My partner TJ bought it for me for my birthday. For my birthday. So that I'm going to play that this year. Batman Arkham Assault, I didn't play, but that's another thing I need to play. So the games that I like this year. Transformers Devastation. That was a sleeper hit.
Yeah, it kind of came out of nowhere.
Fallout 4, I'm still enjoying. It's a bit of a time suck. The DLC for Dragon Age Inquisition, I really enjoyed.
Interesting.
Still the third that you BioWare.
It's funny that Billy was mouthing Dragon Age when Chris said that 2014 was such a dry year. Like, Dragon Age was the only decent game that year.
That's
why it won Game of the Year. If it came out this year, I think it would have got very few looks.
No, that's true. And my last game, Rise of the Tomb Raider.
No,
improvements on the previous one, and it's going
all solid picks.
I meant to add for anyone who's going to yell at me for this later. I haven't yet played Undertale. Undertale is winning every award, every game of the year accolade known to man. It is in my Steam library. I bought it during the summer sale. I will be playing it, and people can quit bugging me about not including it on lists because you know.
You know who you are.
Apparently it's incredible.
Steve.
Steve, geez.
All right, well.
Polka Gigi.
Stu, did you play anything this year?
Just a lot of words with friends.
Just a lot of words?
Just a little game I heard.
It's a good game, it's kind of a step below the
Well, we might.
Once you get into the story of it, it's
it's an intense and rich backstory. All right.
Shall we take a break?
We're going to take a quick break, then come back.
No, hang on. Your games.
Well, I was...
Parrot me. Say what your games
Witcher 3.
Were.
Witcher 3 is good. I also played the Batman DLC, the Arkham Knight DLC, which...
Was it any good?
Better than I expected. It tied up loose ends for the characters. I think if you played the series, you owe it to yourself to drop $15 and see where they leave. It's Killer Croc, who was in the first one. Mr. Freeze, who was in the second. Mad Hatter, who no one gives a shit about but is there for some reason. He was also in the second.
Yeah.
And the last character was Killer Croc, Mad Hatter.
Is that the one where you play as...
Oh, Harley? And Ra's al Ghul.
Didn't he die?
He was in the second.
But his whole thing is he comes back.
Yeah.
So that, but anyway, that whole stuff's dealt with. The actual gameplay is fairly repetitive. A lot of fetch quests, a lot of following
trails.
Is it trails
set
and stuff.
After the game?
It's set during, because like the other games, it's like one crazy night for Batman, pretty much.
Yeah. All right. Also, sorry, just quickly, honourable mentions I forgot to shout out to. Both are re-releases for console, but Wasteland 2 and the Final Fantasy X and X-2 HD Remaster for PS4. both really excellent. Like, obviously, Final Fantasy X, great if you like the original game. It has kind of aged a little in terms of the story, but still really excellent. And Wasteland 2 is just so good.
Cool.
Easy. All right, well, we're going to be back. We're going to do our discussion topic, which is going to be another read, watch, play. But what we're actually going to be doing is looking forward to the year ahead, 2016, talk about some of the things that we're excited about and maybe some things we're a bit skeptical towards. So it should be a lot of fun. I am going to make it through this year if it kills me. I am going to make it through this year if it kills me. Alright guys, so now we're in our discussion topic, whereas we're going to basically do read, watch, play again, but we're looking forward to the year ahead, some things we're interested in. So let's hit off the bat with watch. Billy, you named a couple of things, so do you want to list those?
Yeah, sure. Give you our feelings. So obviously Rogue One.
Which is the Star Wars...
Standalone spin-off. Yeah, the stealing of the Death Star plans.
Gareth Edwards is directing that, I think.
Yeah, did Godzilla.
Funny joke. I mean, apparently in the expanded universe, someone said once... You know, if you invited everyone who stole the Death Star plans, you'd have a party.
And now they're making a movie out of that concept.
So, Cap. The Cap 2, Civil War.
Oh, man.
Cap 3.
I can't believe that they're up to 3 just in that particular franchise, and I'm actually genuinely excited for Cap 3.
I know.
It looks amazing.
I feel like Captain America Civil War is actually not, like, a Cap film. It's an Avengers light film.
It's Avengers 2.5.
Yeah. It's like that. Civil War was kind of like that. It's like Civil War was kind of an Avengers
book. Totally. Yes, Civil War was an event. It wasn't a cat book. So.
And I think in some ways, because my biggest criticism of Avengers 2 was the fact that it teased that there was going to be conflict, but a lot of that didn't feel organic because Scarlet Witch was messing with people's minds.
Mm. Mm.
So it felt like a rehash of one, and it didn't actually feel like conflict. Whereas this looks like Bucky... not Bucky, sorry, Cap and like... Tony Stark are actually fighting, actually at odds.
Yeah, from the trailer, it looks like Bucky's been falsely accused of doing something bad, and they need to take him down.
And of course, Steve doesn't.
Yeah, Steve wants to support, and there's two sides.
Which has been growing throughout.
Yeah.
Like, that's been there throughout. It was there in the first Avengers. It's been there, his distrust of, like, control through the whole way.
Yeah,
so
totally. Especially in The Winter Soldier, where he's very skeptical of S.H.I.E.L.D. and eventually brings it down.
Yeah, like everyone should do their own thing within reason. There shouldn't be government control about everything.
Would it be fair to say that's your?
I'm Team Cap.
Your most anticipated superheroes going against each other film for this year?
I don't know.
To compare it to?
There's actually Tom vs. Jerry.
That film is going to be amazing.
And there's X-Men as well.
Thought of X-Men, not Batman vs. Superman.
That film is going to suck.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Look, I will go watch that with my friends. But I am going in there with low expectations.
You know what?
It's going to suck.
And they will be met.
Snyder will meet those expectations. Jesus. You know what? My feeling on Batman vs. Superman is it's going to be a polarizing film. Like with Man of Steel, people are either going
to
love it.
There were two sides to them.
Yeah, Man of Steel.
It's just one side was very small.
Yeah.
But I know people who love it and thought it was the refresh Superman needed, so I reckon there's going to be people who say the same thing.
That was your mate who's an Eskimo who has never actually seen films, right?
He's like, wow.
Yeah, this is amazing.
Actually, Phil, a guest on the podcast a couple episodes back, Mitchell Hall, liked Man of Steel.
See, the thing I have found over the years is that it's not a Marvel fanboy or DC fanboy thing. It's very much like if you like the type of films that DC make, the current DC films, you won't like the Marvel films. If you don't like the Marvel films, you will love the DC films.
Because they're both... I mean, DC's very going the super type. Serious kind of...
Super dark.
Yeah, very very grim kind of route, whereas Marvel is going the very kind it's of Disney fun.
The comic book route is what Marvel are doing. Well, DC are trying to make bloody post 9/11 war dramas.
DC are doing the comic book, the 80s comic book route. I mean, they're calling in Frank Miller.
The friggin' Rob Liefeld age of comic books, jeez.
The other thing, I was going to mention some TV shows. Daredevil Season 2. Broad City, which is the next season of that. You guys probably haven't seen it. Preacher, which is starting.
Yep.
Westworld and The Get Down.
I'll quickly jump on Daredevil Season 2 just because that's probably what I know the most of from that list. Looks really good. I'm really excited for the Punisher in that.
And I'm excited for Electro as well.
Especially given I know that... Have you read the Brubaker run?
I've only read bits of it. I've been meaning to get that big hardcover.
Because the Punisher-Daredevil interaction in that is really, really, really good.
See, so I don't even know that Punisher was in that Brubaker run.
He gets himself arrested to break Daredevil out of prison.
And it's great.
It was amazing.
It's, yeah, it sounds like it could be stupid on paper, but the execution is flawless.
So good.
And just kind of the idea that these two characters more or less want the same thing, but the way they do it is so different. They're both going outside of the law, but the way they kind of operate is so different. Yeah, it'll just be interesting to see how that kind of plays out in the show.
What about you, Stu?
I think in the near, like January is actually going to be really good, and I know that's sort of it's a bit short-sighted, but we've got things like Carol, the Spotlight, the Danish Girl, they're opening this month.
And the Danish Girl's the Eddie Redmayne
one. Eddie Redmayne, yeah, that looks...
Am I the only one who thinks he's an overrated actor?
Redmayne? Oh, yeah, it depends.
I've seen him in a few things, yeah. But I'm not a fan.
He was in...
He was in Jupiter Ascending, yeah, he was the whispering villain in
that's
that.
That's the only thing I knew him from, yeah. And he was not... And I don't think that was him. I think his character direction was really bad.
Yeah, like I liked. Was pretty bad. Yeah, the I whole liked movie him. Was I liked it him in the theory of everything. I think he's got a likable presence on screen. But I think he's still sort of finding his way. Some of the big thing. I'm obviously the comic. It's a good year for comic book films.
Well, every year there's more and more coming out. This year's going to be 5 or 6.
No, it's like 11 because you got Deadpool, really? You got Turtles, you got X Men.
Oh no, of course.
I'm actually looking forward to Turtles. Yeah, I liked the first one.
The second Turtles looks better than the first one.
And you got Bebop and Rocksteady now coming.
And
it actually
looks like them. And Krang is going to be in it, and it looks like Krang from the cartoon.
You know, I think the thing about the first Turtles movie is like the concept is so ridiculous that I think it works on paper and in cartoons because it's a stylized world. When they're in the real world, I think you have to go so over the top to make it work. And who better than someone from the Michael Bay school to deliver that?
It wasn't fantastic, but...
It could have been a lot worse.
It could have been a lot worse. And the first live-action one wasn't that good. You know, wasn't as good as the cartoon.
I want Vanilla Ice back.
I was about to say,
ninja,
unfortunately,
ninja, rap, ninja, ninja, rap.
Vanilla go. Ice was not available.
I think one of, and so the first thing that really looking forward to, I know you are, is The Nice Guys, Shane Black's new one with Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling. Yes.
That I'm kind of interested.
Like, that looks like
sounds
a lot
like a
of
good
fun.
Cast.
Yeah, so that's...
I really enjoyed Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah. Oh. So, and I think
one of my favourite films.
I think last year was sort of clouded with the build-up to Force Awakens and a couple of other big things that this year I haven't even looked at sort of... had a good look at what's coming. So I'm sort of... It's refreshing just to sort of, like, discover it as we go kind of year. And I think this is going to be a really strong year.
Mm. Well, last year was also a really strong year. Yeah. Hateful Eight, I'm so looking forward to that.
I mean, it's come out already for our overseas listeners. It's come out already in the States.
A lot of...
Very mixed reviews as well.
Yeah.
But I've heard largely positive on my end, though.
Okay, yeah. I have heard, again, like...
Well, my sources that I have on the little thing called the internet.
I don't know if you've heard of it.
See, I've had some friends give it negative, but there are a lot of people that don't like Tarantino.
I think the thing with Tarantino is he seems to rub so many people the wrong way.
A lot of them think he pretty much steals everything from various films.
He homages. It's pastiche.
I think this will all be explored in his current lawsuit. So. Yeah.
I.
Oh, the Django Unchained one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was listening to a podcast where he talked, and I thought he was great. He seemed like he had a lot big love of cinema, and then I made the mistake of Googling him and seeing how he's, you know, being accused of saying he hates every movie and lawsuits and this and that. And after that, I was like, oh, man, he's such a... shady person, or he seems like a shady person. But I reckon if you sat down in a room and just spoke with him, I think you'd have a blast.
He's an auteur.
He's very polarizing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he is. And I reckon that might account for some of the bad press that he's getting.
Any TV shows?
No, I bought True Detective Season 2, which I know everyone is going to say, why bother? But I enjoyed the first, so I'm catching up on that.
Tell me if it's any good, because I love the first one.
And I bought The Nick, so I'm sort of catching...
Good British cop drama.
It's a British. It's Steven Soderbergh's one about the New York hospital with Clive Owen.
That's
And I love Soderbergh, so he, and he's directed all the episodes. So I'm sort of, and I'm going to pick up Fargo, the Fargo TV series. So
yeah, this apparently year, season two was better than season one.
Yeah.
I heard it's like the best TV that's in decades.
Kind of, yeah. Totally. But
every, it, do you guys get the sense that everything now is like it's the best thing on TV?
You can't just have, like, it's quite decent. Yeah. It has to be the
world
the best.
Is built on hyperbole.
Yeah, but yeah. I'm trying to catch up this year on a bit of TV because I feel like I watched a few too many films last year, so maybe some more TV.
Might I don't be. much TV like free to air, but if I do, I usually watch SBS too because that seems to be.
They've been getting a lot of good shows from the US. Yeah. And you mentioned Westworld, Billy. I don't know much about it other than it's got Brubaker. Ed Brubaker is a writer.
Is it based on the Michael Crichton?
It's based on the. It's a TV series, kind of based on the film.
But no Yul Brynner this time.
No Yul Brynner.
What was the film pretty? It's abstract or.
It's like someone's. It's been a while since I've seen it, but it's like someone's stuck in a like.
It's a theme. It's a theme park
which is all full of robots and everything, and then goes bad. Oh, like another Michael Crichton book that he came out with.
I'm noticing a theme emerging.
Yeah.
Robots bad.
Yeah,
but it's got Anthony Hopkins in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Damon Lindelof is doing the or is it someone really famous is writing it? I think it's either Damon Lindelof or Brian K. Vaughan.
Oh, okay.
No, Ed Brubaker.
Yeah, Ed Brubaker's in it as well, but there's like the showrunner, I think. Oh, okay. It's either Lindelof or it's Drew Goddard or it's someone really high up there. And whoever it was, I went, yep, I'm interested.
And it's HBO, so it won't be it won't be bad.
It's HBO and it's not Game of Thrones.
Quickly, a movie that I overlooked. The new Harry Potter, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I'm tentatively excited.
Starring Eddie Redmayne.
Again, another Redmayne. Look, I'm not thrilled that Yates is directing, given that the films he directed were the weakest of the... for me, some of the weaker of the Harry Potter franchise.
Which ones did he do again?
The last four.
Yeah.
Oh, they were alright. They were disposable.
Prisoner of Azkaban, for me, was the pinnacle of that series, where they really...
I think he was probably working under the toughest conditions at that stage when it was just keep getting them out.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping now he's had a bit of time and J.K. Rowling's writing it as a screenplay. I'm hoping that that they take it to some interesting places. I like that they're expanding the universe.
And hopefully not beholden to sort of the mythology. Like hopefully Harry Potter, it can dance around without having...
Isn't it sort of like a prequel?
It's 70 years before.
And I think the threat this time is people without magic trying to get rid of the wizards, which it wasn't really a thing that came up in Harry Potter.
Because they've got a new term for the muggles in
America.
In America, which makes sense.
It's not great. I'll give them that. Yeah.
But the setting could be interesting. Like 100%. They could,
and I mean, they'll get the fish out of water thing, given that I think Eddie Redmayne's character is British. I think it could be interesting. But no, fair enough. It could be very polarizing as well.
I guess we could move on to
Reed. Do we want to move on to Reed?
Yeah.
All right, well, I've got a couple to throw out, unless anyone else has got some that they're looking forward to.
I've got some as well, but you go first.
Chris, you got something. You had a look on your face like you had something that you had to...
I have many things to say. It's all good.
Well, one thing I'm going to throw out that'll be a bit, that I know Chris and me are both excited for is Chill will be wrapping up this year.
Oh, just say it isn't so.
I'm sad it's ending, but I like that he's set himself a 60-issue arc.
Yeah.
And I definitely feel like he's planned, like he knows what's going to happen in that last issue. It feels very planned.
Definitely. And the end of the fifth hardcover makes me go... Yeah, we're at a good place to start wrapping up now.
Yeah, because he kind of sowed some seeds early in the series that hasn't really gone anywhere with, and now I feel like in this last kind of arc he's going to deal with that stuff.
Definitely. John Layman's just an amazing writer. And
he really hit his stride on Chew.
Yeah, and Rob Guillory, I really hope he finds work after this.
Still making a TV series, Chew?
I don't know.
They're doing an animated. It's either a series or a short film, and they've got Stephen Ewan who's Glenn in The Walking Dead as Chew, and Felicia Day is in it.
A fan of Felicia Day, but
not anymore.
Why?
Gosh, she's annoying.
Okay.
She has no range as an actor. She has one role she plays, and can I just point out? Her little nervous, timid, nerdy girl shtick is not who Amelia Mintz is. The character she's playing in the film is not how she is in the story. And it's just, I don't think it's a good fit.
I'll be interested. I feel like in terms of someone who probably is familiar and has an appreciation for the source material, I think both Stephen Ewan and Felicia Day are probably good picks in that regard.
Stephen Ewan is definitely, but
Look, I'll be interested
to see. I'll reserve judgment until I see it, but I'm not anticipating anything.
Something else, the first trade of Paper Girls is going to be coming out soon. So the first couple of issues, I think, dropped last year. The Paper Girls is Cliff Chiang on art and Brian K. Vaughan on the story, and it looks really good. I don't know much about it. Have you checked it out, Billy? Because I know you'd go
monthly. No, I haven't read it. I was waiting for it for a trade.
Yeah, but that looks really interesting.
I tend
really
to be trade waiting these days.
It's just... On the wallet, storage-wise, it's a lot easier.
Oh, yeah.
Well, because also, I don't know about you, Billy, but I reread my books a lot, and it's a lot easier to read a trade than read a bunch of singles.
Or do you want to jump in with some, Billy?
I think it's one that we both are keen on. Nowhere Men is coming back.
I haven't actually, you know what? I've been meaning to check it out. I had it on my list because I know that you're a big fan.
It's a good series. It's
how long has it had? It's been like 2 years?
Yeah, it's been 2 years, and the writer of it said, look, I mean, the reason it's been 2 years is because he's battling a bit of depression and stuff.
Oh, wow, okay. Yeah, but he has,
it's a great series.
They're Not Like Us, which was by him, which came out this year, which I checked out.
Yeah. But, no, it's a good series, sci-fi series. You know, it's always good to have a sci-fi series, and it's from Image.
Isn't it kind of superhero? Like, doesn't it play on some of the Fantastic Four kind of things?
Yeah, it's kind of Fantastic Four. It's like almost like a mixture of like Lost in Space and look. I mean, they don't get lost in space or anything, but it's very like that weird kooky like sci-fi of Lost in Space and Fantastic Four and everything. Like, there's an accident and everyone gets powers, and they're like scattered across the Earth type thing.
Okay, interesting.
And like this shady government organizations and various companies that are trying to hunt these people with the powers down.
Okay. Okay.
And it left it in a place where it's like, cool, it was a good ending.
Okay.
But left you wanting more for the... So I'm looking forward to what they're doing next. The other one, the next Casanova book's coming out.
Okay. I got up to date.
Casanova is a trip.
I gotta be in the right headspace to enjoy it. It's that kind of Fraction book.
Yes, and I love Matt Fraction stuff, but I know it's 4 issues. I'm definitely going to be trade waiting for it because you can't read them issue to issue.
Mm. That's true, and I think it's almost a detriment to the book. It's so kind of, it's very psychedelic, very non-linear.
I love the art.
Oh, the art's beautiful.
Fabio Moon?
Yeah, Fabio Moon did this last arc, and then Gabriel Barr's jumping on. So they alternate.
Brothers anyway. I'm pretty sure they're brothers.
I don't think they're biological brothers. I think they just are really good friends that
they're
work
just
together.
Bros.
I think, but anyway, maybe.
We'll Google it later.
Anyway. The other one was a Marvel book. It's Black Panther, but it's written by...
He's an African-American guy,
yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah, Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Awesome. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, and I just like the fact that it's person of colour writing Black Panther. And it's someone that's actually, like, person of colour who's, like, an academic and...
And maybe can speak to some of these sort of issues.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting, someone taking that on of Black Panther.
Is that then to tie into, you think, for Civil War?
No.
Marvel does a thing where they won't tie the titles in, but when a movie's coming out, they'll make sure that character's got a book on the shelves.
Yeah.
Well, that was why Superior Spider-Man ended right before the second Amazing film came out.
Yeah, but that's Marvel's whole push this year is to get more, like, female writers and more people of colour.
Yeah. They've actually got someone on specifically who that's her job.
I'm excited for the Black Panther movie because Ryan Coogler just, I think, has been announced that he's going to be taking it, and he did Creed this year, the spin-off, and also did Fruitvale Station with Michael B. Jordan. Good director.
Yeah, that's about it.
Something else I wanted to bring up quickly was a Jason Aaron series. This is launched this year, but the trade will be out. Sorry, last year, but the trade will be out this year. Which is a God Damned, which is a basically a kind of a gritty, not even retelling, but interpretation of like the story of Cain from the Old Testament of the Bible. So I was growing up reading all that stuff. So I always enjoy when people kind of adapt these stories. I really enjoyed like Darren Aronofsky's Noah, for instance.
Mm.
So I'm really looking forward, and I've heard good things about The God Damned in terms of it's not sort of a kid-friendly interpretation. It's very, very gory, very violent. But of course, you know, for anyone who's actually read that Old Testament stuff as an adult, the book is. So it's in some ways probably a more faithful retelling. So I'm really looking forward to checking that out.
Not as faithful as the rock monsters
of
Noah. Which, again, I love the first half of that. I just wish the back end was as...
Okay, maybe we'll have to have a discussion off about
Wait for the Noah spoiler cast.
But
does it sink or float?
Yeah, in regards to games, I don't know much. I mean, there was one game that I was kind of looking forward to, but it's been pushed to 2017, Scalebound.
Scalebound?
It's like, it's Xbox exclusive, and it's sort of like an action RPG. I think it's from a Japanese game house, not sure, but it looked pretty cool.
Okay.
But other than that, there's not much in regards to games. I'm probably
YouTube better off. Well, Chris, do you want
to
jump
in? Can I jump back a second, go to read?
Oh,
well,
I'm so sorry. No,
that's cool. I really want to read, as I was saying before, All New, All Different Avengers from Mark Waid.
And now, apparently him and Samny are meant to be having a Black Widow series that's coming out at some point as well.
Could be into that. I didn't mind Nathan Edmondson's run.
Okay.
It was a little arty for arty's sake, and it got a bit too expensive to buy. Like, the trades became insanely bad.
But Marvel's fairly pricey at the moment.
Yeah, but he had someone... Was it Philip Tan? No, he had someone else on artwork who did, like, watercolours.
Somebody Noto.
Yeah, Phil Noto.
Was it Phil Noto? That's it.
And, like, it was arty, but it kind of felt like it was aping a bit of, like... It was the inverse of Fraction and Aja on Hawkeye. Like, it was that kind of arty style, but it wasn't the rigid, nice, thick lines Aja did. It was, like, all ethereal and floaty and what have you. So I'm looking forward to Mark Waid's Avengers. There's a whole lot of Brandon Sanderson books coming out this year in the novel world, which I'm looking forward to. The Bands of Mourning is out in January, which is the next Mistborn book, which I'm eagerly anticipating. I swear, the amount of times I've mentioned Sanderson on this podcast, I should just start a Sanderson podcast on my own and be just like, how great is he?
But you'd have to tell people who do the drinking game at home.
The Sanderson drinking game.
Yeah,
so because they'd have to, they'd want
otherwise
to follow
they could
you.
Get liver poisoning.
Yeah, no, that'd be why they do that. There's a couple of new Star Wars books coming out from Chuck Wendig and Claudia Gray this year, which
they
are
seem
really
to be
good.
Churning out the novels now, because I remember when that first Aftermath book came out and you were really excited.
It was
and
good.
Now it just seems like it kind of opened a floodgate in terms of a lot of stuff seems to be...
Well, they seem to be doing a bit more closer to Episode 7, where before, obviously, they couldn't release a lot of stories from that period. Now they're kind of knocking down that wall because the movie's out, which I'm really looking forward to.
And I think they need to, because we're all starting to play the what-if game, what happened, and the movie...
They've got to answer some questions.
Yeah,
well, the movie skillfully suggests to other things happening, and I think everyone's now going to be so keen to fight to fill in the blanks.
Yep. Or write their own.
Yeah, or write their own, yeah. So, which,
And there's also this year the conclusion of the Red Rising trilogy by Pierce Brown, which is basically... The elevator pitch makes it sound a bit like The Hunger Games, but it's really not. It's this young guy who lives on Mars, like, because Earth has colonized all the planets. And they live in a hierarchy where everyone's denoted by color. So he's a red, he's like a salt of the earth kind of guy. And the aristocracy are all golds, and he... has to masquerade as a gold to basically overthrow their power structures and bring down the hated aristos. But then it goes to really weird places and is really cool. And the third book of that is coming out in a couple of months, I think, or actually maybe next month. Highly recommend. The first book's just called Red Rising, and it's just some really good...
Is it it sounds like work. It could be like a bit teen angsty or young adulty.
It is
young. I don't mean that in like a bad way, but in terms of...
It is a young adult series, but it's not anywhere near as angsty as The Hunger Games was. Like, I read some of the first book of The Hunger Games, and it was just very... Like, you guys have seen the movie. It's kind of a straight adaptation of that. It's very kind of...
Which I like the first two. The last two sort of left me a bit cold.
As soon as those 3D dogs came up, I was done.
Yeah.
that like, for some reason, children murdering each other was cool in my mind, but as soon as you're making dogs out of nothing...
Oh, that's bullshit.
Oh,
that's unethical.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And they're holograms. I didn't even have a choice.
Yeah. But yeah, and also there's the last ever Terry Pratchett book is out this year, The Long Cosmos.
Now, is that co-written by his daughter?
That's co-written. He wrote it with Stephen Baxter. It's part of that series, The Long Earth, The Long Mars, The Long War, all those ones, which is apparently really good. It's like a parallel universe hopping Hitchhiker's Guide, Douglas Adams style story. And that's going to be, he finished the work long before he died, and that's going to be his last published work, and I think that's out in like June or July.
Okay.
Oh, and then we may get Game of Thrones this year.
I thought
not.
If we do, it's not going to catch up before
they've come out and said it's not.
Yeah, Martin gave a very mea culpa blog post saying it's not coming out before the show. The show's going to lap me.
Yeah.
which he loves doing.
He's like,
I like how I'm really not fast at this point.
Since you've read Game of Thrones, I haven't.
I just want the kudos.
I need the affirmation.
I've read six books in the last two years.
You'll probably kill me for this, but I've caught up on the books via the wiki. The wiki are. Yeah.
Chris is like holding back a...
I'm not that much of a purist.
It's no, it's just, I don't know. Do you think Jon Snow is alive?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too.
There's a very old... a writing dictum that someone, I can't remember who, told me a while ago, which is, if you want someone to die in a story, you show them dying. If you leave it on a cliffhanger, chances are they're not going to die.
No. If you didn't see it, it didn't happen.
Yeah, and the fact that they made it doesn't hold up in court,
but...
but I mean, like, when they wanted Ned Stark to die, spoilers, he died on the page. And when they wanted the Red Wedding to happen, they died on the page. When they wanted... you've read the books. When they made Brienne appear to die at the end of book 4... and then it turned out she hadn't. It's that kind of thing. They made him die as the cliffhanger. I don't think he's dead.
The TV series, we're finally going to see... God, what's the one that's from here down broken?
Bran. Yeah.
I like that Bran's finally in it, the TV series. I had to wait all of season... No, because a lot of the criticism of last season were like, oh, where's Bran?
I didn't miss him at all. I thought his plot was so boring.
I had many criticisms of last season, but none of them were that. I think it just felt like it was meat buying time.
Yeah.
But I
figure he's part of, what is it, the Three-Eyed Raven?
Who got recast as Max von Sydow.
Who was he originally?
Originally he was Struan Roger. But now he's the guy from the start of episode 7.
It's not like the crow got much, the Three-Eyed Crow guy got much screen time initially, so I feel like it'd be...
I think it's great. I love Max von Sydow. Any excuse to see him on screen is awesome. But on the subject of watching, that is something I'm kind of tentatively.
I'm on the fence. I'm almost tempted to just binge it as an entire season instead of watching episode to episode as I usually do.
We should do that thing.
Finished season 5, so.
Stu, yeah.
I don't know. This year it just went off the boil for me. I read them and I sort of went. I'm in it. And I think it's just the lack of access as well, because I have to wait till it comes on iTunes and then at that stage.
That's my problem as well.
I think the freshness of the concept was so, when it first came out, people were like, "Wow, it's a fantasy series. It deals with modern some sort of modern social issues and it's brutal and this and that." And I think people have kind of gotten over that.
Yeah, it might be different now that...
some people that are very...
Now that we're ahead...
Oh my God, you've depicted that scene way too brutal as it was in the book.
Which is, I think, there's going to be pros and cons to that sort of thing. But maybe now that we're sort of going ahead of the books, and I get... For me, the line blurs between what was book, what was show for a lot of times. Like, where are we at? Who's... Oh, that's right. And...
That's Theon Stavis penis, who knows?
Exactly.
Wait, so have you caught up on the books?
Yeah, I've read them,
Okay, there was one part of the books that I was kind of shitty that isn't in the TV shows. But I'm curious if it might end up being in the TV show.
What?
Lady Stoneheart?
Yes.
No, it won't. I've already come out and said that won't.
And I don't mind her not being in it. As much as I like Michelle Fairley,
Well, if that's the case, if Lady Stoneheart's not in it, that means, what's her name, Captain Phasma wouldn't die.
That's why she went and got Stannis. Spoilers for season 5, by the way. That's why she went and got Stannis, because that didn't happen in the book, and they removed that whole plot.
It's all over the place, and Jaime didn't go to there.
That Dawn plot was so stupid. Well,
Anyway.
It was so dumb. Anyway, sorry. We should go to play. Let's go to play.
So, Chris, I take it you're excited for the second and final Witcher 3 expansion.
Witcher 3.
Wait, so it's only going to have...
Witcher 3.
So it's had one massive bit of DLC, which was 10 hours, which was Heart of Stone. Which, have you played that yet, Chris?
No, I've been saving it for a rainy day. Once my thesis is in February, I'm going to take a weekend and just play.
As someone who's starting Witcher 3, how much are these DLCs, curious?
15, I think, was Heart of Stone.
And it's for 10 hours.
And that is good.
And I think Blood and Wine, maybe...
20 or 30.
30? It's 30 hours.
It's
20 hours, sorry.
And is it best to play them when they come out?
No.
The great thing about the DLC is they feel like standalone adventures, completely divorced from the main story.
Okay.
After finishing The Witcher 3, it was nice to come back in that world and do something completely different.
I've also heard that they're geared towards higher level players as well.
Yeah, they are. But you can jump straight in and they'll scale you up, apparently.
Yeah. Cool. But the thing is, the core story, for me anyway, the original story of The Witcher 3 is good enough on its own that I could play through that and that's compelling enough that I don't want to do other things. I want to do the main story first, which doesn't happen for me very often in RPGs. Usually I like digressing.
Another, I'll just quickly bring up, I'm more or less excited for Uncharted 4. It's just been such a long wait. And so, because of the hype machine of games, you hear so much about a game that by this time I'm kind of, you feel like you've already played it.
I've never played any of the Uncharted
games. No, I really like the series. It's Indiana Jonesy, lots of explosions, completely over the top.
I recently bought as part of my PS4.
The Drake.
I got the Drake collection.
Yeah, the Drake collection.
He wasn't enjoying part one.
The first game. The first game was really finding its feet. The second...
Well, he tried it and really he, solved. Like, he was...
Really?
Yeah, I don't know, maybe...
Because
we've come from Lara Croft.
Yeah, and you know what, I had the opposite experience where I was like, oh, new Tomb Raider will be a bit like Uncharted. And Tomb Raider is much more kind of grounded. Mm. Uncharted is just, the gunplay's a bit wonky and clunky, but it kind of works in its favour, you know, it's very over the top. It's, you don't conserve ammo like you do in Tomb Raider. You pretty much pick up a gun, fire off everything it's got, and then like run and you'll find another gun to
you're
use.
You're not getting impaled on spikes in a horrible
The camera lingering for like 30 seconds on the impaled person you just killed because you didn't press X quick enough.
Yeah. easily the game I'm looking forward to most this year is No Man's Sky, which is out sometime in June. I am hanging out.
Really?
For that.
I just wonder how much there's going to be to do in that game.
I think there's going to be a ton, and it's not going to be very structured, which is exactly my kind of thing.
Okay, whereas...
Because something...
I crave structure.
Yeah, something listeners should keep in mind. I am a huge sandbox game fan, and Christoph is not. I like making my own thing. I love it. I love a structured story as well, but I love things like GTA V. I loved the sandbox aspects of Witcher 3 and a Fallout 4, and Christoph's not
whereas
as keen on
that. I preferred, the strong story elements of Witcher 3.
Yeah, which again, I loved. I adore the story of Witcher 3. But No Man's Sky just looks like a very make-your-own-story, go-explore shit.
It looks like the sort of game that'll, regardless of whether it does well commercially, I think there'll be some crazy dedicated fans who do all sorts of amazing things with it.
Someone will explore the entire universe however many trillion randomly generated planets
is this
it is.
Oh, is this one where you're jumping planet to planet? The guy's like always on Fallon. He's a real awkward dude who's like...
Oh, Sean Murray.
It's like drop the awkward guy shtick and just...
It's funny how we get all these kind of awkward, I'm just going to use the word nerds, on talk shows now. Like Seth Meyers Tonight has a lot of, The Late Show with Seth Meyers has a lot of like comic book guys.
Mm.
And they're all like, most of them you feel like there's a reason you write comics and not on TV.
Oh, yeah. How's it going? Hi.
You told me not to look straight down the camera.
Video game guys feel a lot the same. Because these are guys who, you know, their strength is coding and creating, not necessarily being out.
Then hire a PR person to send them out there. Yeah. You know, like,
I'm also keen... I think Hideo Kojima, he just signed a deal with Sony because his non-compete with Konami went up in December.
Okay.
And he might have something out this year.
Because I know he's got his own studio, so people are interested to see what he'll do on his own. Now he doesn't have to...
I'm sure it'll involve big boobs and big butts.
I'm sure it will.
Hey.
And I'm sure it'll have his name a million times as you play through the opening scene.
Well, he did that as a screw you to Konami when they took his name off the promotional material.
That's kind of funny.
Well,
do we want to kind of wrap it up there, guys?
Are you looking forward to any games?
Well, actually, we'll be hopefully this next generation, current generation console.
PS4.
Waiting to see if the new Nintendo console drops this year, because I've always been a Nintendo person. NX or whatever it's called.
Yeah, I've heard developer kits have already gone out to game devs to start making games for it. So,
Is it what it is?
It's effectively a Wii that can compete with the Xbox One and the PS4. It's like a radically enhanced.
Because I've been Nintendo my whole life and I've never been disappointed with anything they've done. Right. I think their future, though, is going more mobile. I think they're...
Sticking with handhelds and fun, like, Wii-like consoles.
Which is all... The more and more you get a 200-hour game, I prefer just a platformer that...
My housemate's got a Wii U, and he almost exclusively busts it out for Mario Kart.
They're amazing,
great at parties.
Sorry, to interrupt, but I feel like Nintendo has always kind of never been necessarily strong on the tech side, but in terms of the fun and accessibility,
definitely. It is always... For the gameplay, it's always just immensely replayable.
And in terms of consoles, they seem to leapfrog. Like, the 64 was great, GameCube not so great, Wii was revolutionary,
yeah.
Wii U not so much, yeah. So hopefully the NX follows a pattern and is another solid console. Yeah, and
you're never going to get... You're never going to get the likes of the... It was never somewhere you go for, like, The Witcher 3 or something. You're not going to
get AAA games.
And PlayStation was always, and now Xbox is that as well, is to go there for those. But, I don't know, for those kind of, like, go-home-switch-the-head-off kind of games, Nintendo's perfect for that.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
Whereas I feel like you go home and have to put in time for an open-world game.
And you have, like, have to, like, not stuff up your romance options in Witcher 3 like I did.
Because you won't get the achievement.
Yeah.
That said, if the NX is... the next thing to come out as, like, the next big Nintendo console, it needs to have a Smash Brothers on it.
Oh, and I think it will have a Zelda, I think it will have a Super Metroid,
and Mario Kart. I'm pretty sure that's, like,
what they legally are obligated to do.
I would actually be happy if a Nintendo system only had Nintendo-produced games and no third-party properties, because they're the... Apart from when Rare were making things for the GameCube... They're the only things I've really ever enjoyed anyway. Well,
that's why you buy a Nintendo console, because you want to play their games.
Yeah. Well, no one bought it to play... when the Wii U came out, they released Arkham City and Mass Effect 3 and Deus Ex Human Revolution. No one bought those, because they had consoles to play them on.
And no one could work out where to put the cartridge.
Yeah, oh, no.
Well, Shall we wrap it up there, guys?
Yeah, next show will be the 2016. Star Wars.
That's right. So why don't we quickly say... So we're going to do a Star Wars special, another Star Wars special, where you guys are going to kind of talk about the Episode 7.
We're not going to tell you what we're going to talk about, all right? You're going to have to listen to the show.
I'm sorry for putting you in a box, too, and for putting labels on you and what you're going to talk about.
Just keep in mind, guys, first of all, thank you for listening with us into the new year.
Thank you, Stu's mum.
And
everyone else who listens.
And anyone else's mum.
And Mitchell Hall. Mitchell Hall's a dedicated listener.
We're lucky that we've got a group of loyal followers who are into what we
name personally.
Yeah. Yes.
So we want to say a big thanks to those, and a big thank you to any new listeners who happen to stumble upon us.
And just keep in mind, the show is very open to feedback. So if there are things you want us to talk about, things you want us to comment on, or things you want us to review, or, you know...
Is that including our feedback?
Wow.
Is that for the suggestion box that we've got in the
foyer? If you want to see Force Awakens another 7 times, let us know.
Do you want him to do it an 8th time while he's drunk? Do you want to do it a 9th time while he's high?
You'll take the hit?
He'll get crazy.
He'll do it through, like, different lenses. But yeah, please, you know, like and comment on our stuff. Give us you know, what you want to see more of in the show. We crave your
validation.
We crave your thumbs up on our posts.
All right, well, thanks, guys. And this was episode 14 of Read, Watch, Play.
Bye.
Woo, bye.
You've been listening to GeekaBuzz Presents Read, Watch, Play. We discussed all things pop culture, including comics, video games, TV, film, and anime.